From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Of course, being used to weaponize an extreme and unchecked agenda. This decision is a total affront to the basic expectations we have for those who wield the power in this nation.
That was President Joe Biden laying out the Democrats' court-packing plan 2.0. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I am Tony Perkins, your host. President Joe Biden traveled to Austin, Texas yesterday to the Lyndon B. Johnson Library to lay out a sweeping attack on judicial independence. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the president's plan to limit the terms of justices and his proposed Supreme Court ethics plan is dead on arrival. We'll talk with Tennessee Congressman Chuck Fleischman in just a moment. Speaking of the court, in June of 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court, of which Justice Ginsburg was still a member, issued a landmark ruling pertaining to employment law, Bostock versus Clayton County. Now, the issue at hand surrounded transgender employees who changed their gender appearance after they were hired. The court's 6-3 ruling opened yet another front in the attack on religious freedom. And this week, the ACLU of Virginia advanced that attack, filing a lawsuit against Liberty University for violating Title VII of the Civil Rights Employment Act. We'll look at the facts of the case when we're joined by Stephanie Taub of First Liberty Institute. Also, on Monday night, there was an online rally for Kamala Harris, White Dudes for Harris. On the video rally that organizers said swelled to over 200,000, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, a potential vice presidential pick, said he celebrated Harris's pro-abortion focus because it not only gave women more freedom, but men too.
Of course, men are also more free in a country where we have a president who stands up for things like access to abortion care. Men are more free when the leader of the free world and the leader of this country supports access to birth control and to IVF. And certainly men like me and my husband are more free when we have a president who supports our freedom to get married to who we love.
Men are more free when women can get abortions? Maybe this should have been irresponsible white dudes for Harris. We're going to talk about it. As magicians are known for their sleight of hand, Democrats in Congress are known for their sleight of words.
45 days after Joe Biden took the oath of office and I became majority leader, Senate Democrats passed a major expansion of the child tax credit, one of the signature policies of the American Rescue Plan. Every single Republican, down to the last member, voted against this bill.
That was Democrat Senate Leader Chuck Schumer claiming Republicans have not supported children via the child tax credit. Well, I can say emphatically that is not true. The child tax credit was a policy idea that was advanced by the Family Research Council back in the 90s, which we have consistently supported, which has enjoyed vast Republican support and Democrat support. However, as it originated, it was pro-family and it was pro-responsibility. That is not what Mr. Schumer and the gang are advocating. We're going to talk about the difference with Robert Rector, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy at the Heritage Foundation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do so. And I want to thank the hundreds of you who voiced your support for Israel in signing the petition calling upon all presidential candidates to stand with Israel. Now, if you'd like to sign it, it's not too late. Simply text the word support to 67742. That's support to 67742. And we are going to deliver those to all of the presidential campaigns, the major three campaigns, encouraging them to stand with Israel. All right. President Biden, he traveled to Texas yesterday to deliver an election year speech calling for radical changes to the U.S. Supreme Court. Not since FDR have we seen something like this. It includes term limits for court justices. The president's address shows both his efforts to delegitimize the current court as well as his call for stacking future courts with loyal partisans of the left. Does this reveal how the left's entire agenda remains dependent on the courts? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Chuck Fleischman. He serves on the House Appropriations Committee and the House Committee on Space, Science, Space, and Technology. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of Tennessee. Congressman Fleischman, welcome back to Washington Watch. It's always good to see you.
Tony, good evening. Thank you. A privilege to be with you, sir.
So, Congressman, let me ask you this. For decades, the left has relied on the court to impose their agenda on Americans. But now that the court is abiding by the Constitution as opposed to bending the Constitution, the current president says it has to change.
Well, I'm outraged. As you know, Tony, for years, the left engaged in what we call judicial activism. Conservative judges and constitutionalists believe in strict construction, looking at the document and interpreting it as it is. Looking at a statute, interpreting it as it is. What the left did, and of course the radical left did this in Roe versus Wade and other things, they tried to put their radical left-wing agenda and expand that. Since they've lost that ability, now they want to change the rules. Plain and simple, when the left loses by the rules they put in place, they try to change the rules. In a word, it's cheating.
I see two things at play here, Congressman. One, you just described, it is an acknowledgement that they have to change the rules when it doesn't go their way. And they've relied on the courts for over a half a century to implement or impose their policy ideas that they can't get through the legislative process. But is this not really just a political stunt in an election year to try to energize their base with this attack on the court?
Well, Tony, you're absolutely right. It's a political stunt, but it's such a weak political stunt. It doesn't take someone with a PhD in political science to realize that this has absolutely no chance of passing, has no chance of getting any traction. The House, the Senate, they won't touch it. It will go absolutely nowhere. This is Joe Biden in a very weak attempt, reaching out, trying to message something about the court. But give him an F for effort and give him an F for results. No way.
Well, as you said, dead on arrival, the House Speaker Mike Johnson yesterday saying that this would be dead on arrival in the House. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere in the House, unlikely in the Senate. And this requires a constitutional amendment. I mean, this is not something that can even be changed by Congress. It has to be sent from Congress to the states. I mean, I do think it lays bare their philosophy of relying on the court, and they're having a temper tantrum of sorts. But I can't see beyond just the political staging as they go into this presidential election where they're trying to gin up their base.
That's exactly what it is. And Tony, unfortunately, this is a desperate administration. This is a president who is suffering from a lot of different, very apparent maladies. He's not going to run for re-election. They're going to try to pull out every left-wing tool in their left-wing toolbox. But this is not even a good effort. It's very weak. It's pathetic, really, when you think about it. And our founding fathers gave us a great constitution with an ability, a built-in ability to amend the Constitution. Americans never take that lightly when we've amended the Constitution, but this has absolutely no chance whatsoever. It's a swing and a miss.
The president, in an opinion piece in the Washington Post, he said, what is happening now is not normal, and it undermines the public's confidence in court decisions, including those impacting personal freedom. We stand in the breach. Of course, his comments about personal freedom is abortion. And again, it appears as long as the court is bending or breaching the Constitution as opposed to yielding to it, it's okay. But once the court begins to work within the confines of the Constitution, as you laid out, a textualist, a strict constructionist, they have a problem with that. They want activists on the courts. And that's a big difference between the two parties, is it not?
You're absolutely right. And I can say this, they want left-wing activism, not only in the economic realm, but in the social realm. That's their ethos. That's their desire. They work all three branches of government, including the executive branch, with their executive orders from Biden and radical left-wing presidents that hurt the country. When they can't get it through the legislative process where it belongs, they'll try the executive branch, and then they will try the courts. When they're not succeeding there, they'll try to change the rules. What we have to realize, Tony, is that as conservatives, as constitutionalists, we have got to make sure that we never let them win at this. Stick to the rule of law, respect the Constitution, and most importantly, respect what the Constitution does, giving us three independent branches of government that should be able to govern themselves. The United States Supreme Court wants an ethics rule. They should be able to put in their own ethics rules. The House and Senate shouldn't do it. Definitely the White House should not do it. I think it would be a good idea for them to do it, but let them do that on their own volition, in their own lane constitutionally.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important point when you talk about the Constitution. We've got a Constitution. I believe the founders, when they put it together, were inspired. It has worked for nearly 250 years. And you look back on it, and there are exceptions to this, but many times the amending of the Constitution led to unintended consequences. And so I think we should approach that, even as the threshold is very high, we should approach that very, very carefully. Because that is the agreement. The Constitution is the agreement by which the people agree to be governed by their officials, and that's why it's so important we keep it in place. Congressman Fleischman, I'm going to ask you, switching gears here, we just got about a minute and a half left. Congress is on recess for the month of August back in their districts. You're on the Appropriations Committee. What do you anticipate when Congress comes back in September? Will you turn back to the appropriations bills to get those out before the end of the year?
Well, fortunately, Tony, we've passed seven of the 12 bills. There are five left. There's a few that actually have chance of passage. But with the fiscal year ending on September the 30th, we want to make sure that we avoid a government shutdown. So we'll probably be looking at some form of a very short-term continuing resolution into the lame duck. The Senate, the upper chamber, is working this week in an attempt to try to at least pass appropriation bills out of committee. They're behind us, so the chance of actually sitting down for a conference in September with the Senate is next to nil.
Yeah. Well, they don't want that, because that would be a responsible way of funding government, which they've avoided for a long time. Congressman Fleischman, I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to see you. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Tony, God bless you and yours. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Chuck Fleischman from Tennessee. All right. When we come back, the ACLU of Virginia announced it will sue my alma mater, Liberty University, for firing an IT help desk employee who, after becoming an employee, became transgender. Was this a setup? And what rights do religious organizations have when it comes to the religious ethic, statements of faith? We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. Be sure and download the Stand Firm app, and you can watch Washington Watch right there on your smartphone. You can also get our daily devotional, Stand on the Word, as well as our news feed, the Washington Stand. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app. Last week, Liberty University dismissed a male employee hired to work at their IT help desk after he notified the university that he now identifies as a transgender woman and plans to change his name to Eleanor Zinsky. Now, this week, the ACLU of Virginia and a Virginia law firm filed a lawsuit on behalf of Zinsky, claiming the university violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The lawsuit seeks compensation and punitive damages on behalf of Zinsky, as well as a declaratory relief that Liberty University's policy violates Title VII. Now, this looks like a setup to me because of the court's decision in Bostock, which came in June of 2020, which was actually a couple of cases combined into one. One was a funeral home in which a male employee changed over to female. And, of course, it made people uncomfortable. And the employer said, look, can't do this. Was not how we hired you. Well, the court ruled against that funeral home in that case. But we're now talking about religious institutions. Will religious institutions be forced to violate their authentically held, biblically based beliefs? Joining me now to discuss this is First Liberty Institute Senior Counsel Stephanie Taub. Stephanie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on to talk about this very important issue.
Well, it's extremely important because this will have an effect on religious institutions across the country. Liberty University has a doctrinal statement that names denial of birth sex by self-identification with a different gender as a sinful act prohibited by God. Now, how does federal law address religious organizations and their beliefs? Do they have to sacrifice their religious convictions on the altar of political correctness?
They absolutely should not be forced to do that. And fortunately, the law gives a couple of very strong lines of defense four religious organizations. The first one is in the Constitution. And fortunately, we've had a couple of very good decisions from the United States Supreme Court that protects religious schools and their right to hire so-called ministers or people that are responsible for teaching the faith to the next generation as a part of their religious school. And there's also protections in federal employment discrimination law itself, which gives protections for religious employers to make employment decisions based on religion. But what we see here is we see radical organizations like the ACLU that are trying to chip away at the right of religious schools and especially Christian schools and their right to actually remain a community of faith that are dedicated to their doctrinal principles.
So let me ask you this, Stephanie. So in previous court cases, certain positions were recognized as being held to, like, ministers and those that, as you mentioned, teachers and others. But when you're creating a community and you're trying to create a community based upon biblical truth, anyone that you'd allow in there to do something that was 180 degrees removed from that teaching could be problematic for the entire institution, could it not?
Absolutely. What makes a Christian school is its ability to have Christians who adhere to the same doctrinal statements, who are able to work together in a community to achieve a shared mission. And what you have here with these kinds of lawsuits is the ACLU trying to force Christian schools to accept and maintain employees who are acting out of step with those doctrinal statements, who are contradicting them, and this has the potential to interfere with the religious schools and their ability to effectively fulfill their religious missions.
So, Stephanie, what if this is my suspicions? What if my suspicions are correct, that you had an individual that was kind of put up to this and went in one way, and then once they got on the inside, said, "Hey, I'm not really a man. I'm identifying as a woman." I mean, isn't there some type of protection against institutions for those that are trying to set them up and do this surreptitiously?
Well, if it is disingenuous, that's certainly a defense that I would imagine would be raised. And I think institutions like Liberty University require all of their employees to sincerely sign the doctrinal statement or agree to it. And if it was not agreed to in good faith, that would certainly be a very good defense for this organization.
Our Lady of Guadalupe School was a court case that actually kind of broadened the areas that are protected by religious institution, positions rather, that are protected. I think the left's a little bit concerned by that. You also add to that RFRA protections, I think, apply as well. So I would think that Liberty has a pretty good foundation from which to argue that their position is reasonable.
Yes, I would think so. But I think that some of these issues, especially the interpretation of the statutory protections, are ones that the Supreme Court is going to need to clarify in the not too distant future. So we've seen very good cases protecting religious schools and religious and teachers at those religious schools in the Our Lady of Guadalupe case. But some of these cases, we've seen courts go the wrong way and not protect religious organizations, especially when it comes to the statutory rights of these schools. So we'll be keeping an eye out for those at First Liberty. And I know there's a lot of good organizations that are doing work in this area. Fighting to protect religious liberty for these schools is just so important in the face of these increasing attacks.
So these court cases that we're up against a break, but these court decisions like Bostock creates a whole new area of conflict within federal law. And then it's going to eventually, it has to come back to the court for them to clarify and address those issues that they created by their own decision, right?
Yes, absolutely. So that's one problem when courts are expanding what a civil rights legislation that was passed in 1964 actually means. And suddenly it means something totally different. And right. So there's created a lot of open questions, especially when it comes to the intersection of the Bostock decision and religious liberty. So we're continuing to see those pop up, and we're continuing to fight for religious liberty.
Well, we appreciate all that you do at First Liberty Institute. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, stick around. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, last night, there was a online rally for Vice President Harris. It was white dudes for Harris. I wasn't there. There was about 200,000, apparently, according to organizers. It's very interesting. The Democratic Party doubling down on their identity politics. I mean, they've got all these different groups for Harris, all based upon their identity politics. That's fine. That's who they are. They're embracing who they are and what they stand for. But I want to play a clip of the Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg. Now, he was the former mayor up in Indiana. He's married to another man. And he has, I think they adopted a kid or somehow they got a baby. So I'm going to play this clip. He joined the call last night, and this is in part what he had to say. Clip nine.
I'm so glad she has made freedom the theme of her campaign, because I think in so many ways that's what's at stake. And yes, women's freedom is exhibit A after Donald Trump demolished the right to choose. But of course, men are also more free in a country where we have a president who stands up for things like access to abortion care. Men are more free when the leader of the free world and the leader of this country supports access to birth control and to IVF. And certainly men like me and my husband are more free when we have a president who supports our freedom to get married to who we love.
All right. Did you catch that? All right. Men are more free because we have a president and we have a presidential candidate who is all about abortion. When women, of course, they use the term freedom, you know, freedom to kill your child, freedom for an abortion, that's what they're talking about, that because of women having access to abortion and birth control, men are free. Free of what? Responsibility? Free to actually have to answer for their actions? I mean, think about that. I mean, this is the Secretary of Transportation. What he's talking about is creating a society, which we're already seeing, that's a train wreck. And you should know a little bit about that. But the fact that we would have someone at the highest level saying men are free because women can get abortions, it's troubling when you see where we're at. But what I want you to see in this, and I want you to watch this over the next 98 days of this presidential campaign, is that the left is not running away from who they are. They support, they are focused upon abortion until the moment of birth at taxpayer expense. Now, there's a few other things, but this is going to be the number one issue. Every time Kamala Harris opens her mouth, it is about talking about reproductive freedom, freedoms under attack. As what Joe Biden was talking about last night about the court. They were fine when the court imposed abortion on the nation. They were fine when the court imposed same-sex marriage on the nation, even though half the states had passed marriage amendments. They were fine with that. But they were not fine when the court retraced its steps and repented of causing nearly 62 million babies to be killed in this country since Roe v. Wade back in 1973. But here's the reality. That's who they are. They're doubling down on it, and they're running on it. And they're proud of it. Now, I'll have to say I'm concerned that the Republican Party, that has been historically known as pro-life, at least for the last four decades, is not proud, apparently, of their position of life. They've removed it from the party platform, and they've gone silent. I mean, how do you counter a lie? How do you counter the lies of the left? You certainly don't do it by silence. When you align with biblical truth, the fact that every human being is created in the image of God, therefore worthy to be protected under our laws and welcomed into the world, you're moving closer into alignment with biblical truth and therefore the blessing of God. I mean, one of the reasons I think our nation is suffering from the lawlessness, the violence, is because we've moved further and further from that truth. And we've got one party that is hell-bent on advancing a demonic, destructive agenda. We need to have a counterbalance. And there's no wink and a nod. Either you're for it or you're against it. Either you're going to support life or you're not. And I think we're at a critical juncture. And I think we need to support candidates, support parties that will support the sanctity of human life. The left is not ashamed. They are not ashamed of what they support. We need to call upon those candidates we support to be just as proud to stand for the sanctity of human life. All right. After the break, we're going to talk about child tax credit. Senate Democrats are looking to make a campaign issue on cutting taxes for parents of children. Or is there more to this political messaging? What do they really mean by supporting children? When you watch their lips, you need to be watching their feet and their hands in terms of what they're creating. All things are not equal in our nation's capital. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Again, if you've not yet signed the pledge, the petition of support for Israel, calling upon presidential candidates to stand with Israel, I encourage you to text the word support to 67742. Several thousand folks have texted that in, and we're going to be delivering those, but there's still time. So text the word support to 67742. We need to stand with our ally Israel. It's one of those defining issues, and we're seeing increasingly, unfortunately, this is becoming a partisan issue, but we need to make sure we stand with Israel. Text the word support to 67742. Our word for today comes from Psalm 89. Lord, where are your former loving kindnesses, which you swore to David in your truth? Remember, Lord, the reproaches of your servant, how I bear in my bosom the reproach of all the many peoples, with which your enemies have reproached, O Lord, with which they have reproached the footsteps of your anointed. Well, like the children of Israel, our choices and disobedience, well, it often clouds the rays of God's sunshine and blessing upon our lives. But his promises are still there, and they're sure. When it feels as if God does not hear, and the silence of the moment suggests God is not answering, don't stop praying. Don't stop pleading for his mercy based upon who he is, upon his covenant, the promises that he has made. Keep standing in anticipation of the answer based upon the very foundation of his throne, which is righteousness and justice, as mercy and truth, Jesus, intercedes for you at the throne of the Father. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. And I invite you to join us on this daily journey. Again, text Bible to 67742. Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer plans to bring the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act to the floor for a procedural vote this week. But is this just another show vote? Also, the $79 billion package is, well, it's not quite as pro-family as some would like to see. Joining me now to talk about this, Chris Gasek, a senior fellow for regulatory studies here at the Family Research Council. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you, Tony.
So the topic of child tax credit and relief for families, something that is very near and dear to the Family Research Council, something we really spearheaded back in the 90s, the child tax credit. But these terms are not all equal. The left has a different version. Let's talk about that.
Well, essentially what we're involved in, or what we're interested in doing, is providing a basis by which lower-income families can be given credits or incentives to work and provide credits to families for children. And on their side, everything is about converting everything to more welfare and increasing the reach and scope of the traditional welfare payment system, which is never what this program has been about.
So it, instead of creating responsibility, it creates dependence.
Exactly. I think that this is what you're kind of seeing happening, if this is allowed to go forward, is that you would have the opposite of the incentive structure for which all of these great programs that we were involved in going back to for decades, right, they would be undermined. And so this is not a direction in which the Republican members of the House or the Senate should go down.
Right. So, I mean, what they're not saying is that more than 90% of the benefits in this Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act comes from new welfare cash payments, not tax cuts for working families.
Exactly. And I think, in the course of your career, you've seen a lot, you've had a lot of experience with this. So you must have a lot of, it must be disappointing to sort of see how this is trending. I don't know if this just sort of, the Democrats, I don't think they've ever really been, super happy about it. But I don't know if this is something that has sort of clawed its way into the law after the COVID debacle, or, it's an interesting set of problems, right?
Yeah, yeah. Chris, thanks so much. I'm going to bring in Robert Rector from Heritage. I appreciate you joining us, Chris, and giving us an
welcome.
Update. All right.
Good to see you.
Joining me now to help break this down further is Robert Rector. He's a senior research fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy at the Heritage Foundation, and he joins us by phone. Robert, welcome to Washington Watch. Robert, are you with us? All right. Robert, are you there? Robert, I think we lost. Let's bring Chris back in, and we'll continue that conversation until we get Robert back on the line. So, Chris, the timing of this makes it also suspect, because during this summer, since I think the reauthorization of the Federal Aviation Administration, there's been nothing but show votes on the Senate floor, most of them dealing with abortion and other quote-unquote reproductive freedom measures.
Well, I think you're right about this. I mean, and there's something very interesting about this, something that we've talked about a little bit, internally at FRC, but now that you mention it, I hadn't really put it together, but one of the things that's been going on in the sort of the macro political debate after the Republican convention is that, J.D. Vance has been involved in this big fight with Kamala Harris over, saying that the Democrat Party is not a family-friendly policy, and it's an anti-natalist policy, right? It's opposed to child policies, and it's opposed to people having children. So what you said makes a lot of sense, because maybe they're rolling this thing out as a way to counter the charge, which is true about their party, that they're a party that has a different kind of agenda. This sort of the agenda of the, you know, the sort of the feminist sexual revolution, right? And he really sort of laid into them with a lot of energy. And there was a big exchange about that. And he actually raised this issue of the child tax credit. I think he was kind of saying that they seem to be backing away from it. So maybe after that occurred, or after some statement she made, they had to back her up.
So how can you be the party of, you know, unrestricted abortion up to the moment of birth at taxpayer expense and then turn around and say you're pro-child?
Well, exactly. I mean, this is exactly the problem. And I think, you know, look, this whole problem of the birth dearth and the lowing, you know, declining birth rates is a problem that people are recognizing. And I think one of the most famous people, and, you know, who sort of mentioned this as a sort of a geopolitical problem and just a problem for all people, but in the United States, too, is Elon Musk, right? So this isn't something we're making up, or that this is some fantasy of the social conservative right. And, you know, when you have these policies, abortion is the most obvious. Well, it's one of them, right? I mean, another obvious one is this sort of the decline of birth rates that has come along with, you know, the whole sort of antinatalist, you know, arsenal, right? It's all sorts of contraceptives, you know, and sterilization and these sorts of policies, right? And they're not illegal, or they're not all, you know, the same sort of the idea. But the general idea is, you know, that going back to Margaret Sanger is, you know, they don't like kids, right?
Right.
And then so the ultimate consequence of this is that when you sort of divorce this from any kind of long-term consequences and the thinking of individuals making wrong decisions, you have a country like Italy that's basically exterminating itself.
Well, it's just like the comment I played earlier from Pete Buttigieg, that abortion on demand up to the moment of birth at taxpayers' expense, which is their definition of freedom, makes men freer. And I mean, that's their view of this.
Well, right, I mean, Chris, this is like, you know, Hugh Hefner was probably smiling in his grave, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the sexual libertines are all over America are like, yeah, go.
We're funding this with our tax dollars. And this is just more of this irresponsibility that we're talking about when Democrats try to couch this as pro-child programs. All right, Chris, I think we've got Robert Rector now. So, I, again, thanks for standing by.
Great talking to you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Chris Gasek, Senior Fellow for Regulatory Studies here at the Family Research Council. Okay, I think we've got Robert Rector now by phone. As I mentioned, he's a Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Health and Welfare Policy at the Heritage Foundation and a longtime expert on family policy. Robert, do we have you now?
Yes, you do.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. All right, let's talk about the child tax credit passed back in 1997. The groups like Family Research Council helped pushing that. That's not the same thing we're hearing today when they talk about helping families, is it?
No. In fact, that 1997 credit was designed by myself with the coalition of Christian Coalition, FRC. We all joined together. But that was about tax relief for families with kids. This is not. With this bill, they say it's tax relief, but 91% of the expenditure is for families that do not pay or owe any income tax. It's simply a welfare payment, and they camouflage it. They lie about it, and they say, oh, it's tax relief. It's not intended to be tax relief. It's a cash grant. Primarily about 75-80% of it goes to single parent families. It's a subsidy system for single parent families, and the intention of this is to kind of reverse welfare reform from the 1990s, which said look, we are not going to deny people aid. We're not going to put people on the street, but we expect people who are able-bodied and get assistance, whether it's cash, food, housing, or medical care, from the government, they ought to be required to do something to support themselves and their families. This is a way of getting around that and talking about it in a completely misleading way that, oh, this is about tax relief. And unfortunately, the Republicans have bought into this deception and this lie in the House so far. It's a terrible thing, but it reverses welfare reform, and it's the goal. I mean, conservatives say they understand, oh, the left and Karl Marx, he wanted to abolish private property. This is all about economics. No, because right there in the Communist Manifesto, the third item of what needs to be abolished, marriage needs to be abolished.
Right.
This is a welfare system that not only subsidizes single parenthood and non-marital birth, but it imposes substantial penalties, dramatic financial penalties, on low-income parents who choose to marry. A family where maybe the father makes $25,000 a year, the mom makes, say, $20,000, as long as they don't marry and he's off the books, she gets tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars from the government. As soon as they marry, they can lose up to $20,000 a year in welfare payments. So we've deliberately made marriage economically irrational for about 40% of the population.
But that was already the case in so many other programs. This was to offset this. When you go back to the origins of the child tax credit, was to encourage family formation and help parents feel well, it didn't completely offset the cost, but we needed more children.
More children and more children within the context of marriage.
Marriage.
That was the idea of welfare reform. And welfare reform was very successful. At the time that welfare reform was passed, 1 in 10 children in the United States was born to an unmarried teenage girl, 17 or younger, 1 in 10. And it was going up. And even the Washington Post was upset about this. But they said there's no solution. As soon as we put welfare reform in effect that said you're not going to get a lifetime of welfare from the welfare system, that immediately dropped, and that rate has dropped down close to zero. Okay. Now, that must be a dramatic increase in abortion. No, abortions among these young women also fell by the same rate. Welfare reform not only reduced non-marital childbearing, but it reduced non-marital pregnancy as well. And as a result of that, both the number of non-marital births, but also non-marital abortions, has gone down dramatically after welfare reform.
So this reverses that.
As a result of that reduction, there are 10 million fewer abortions that have occurred since welfare reform. All of this will reverse that.
Yeah.
It's intended to.
Intended to.
Yeah. It's clearly the goal. Not for every. I mean, some of the left just likes to redistribute income because it's cuddly and it's kind and it's nice, you know, and it's fuzzy thinking. But the hard left really buys into what Marx and Engels said, that in order to produce utopia, you not only have to get rid of private property and all that stuff that economic conserves, but you have to get rid of the married family. Engels is very, very clear about that.
And of course, organized religion.
What you want is non-married families. The parents don't marry. Kids are raised in government daycare. It's exactly what he says. And
so they can
exactly
program
they
them.
Do.
They can indoctrinate them in those government schools.
Yep.
In those formative years between when the worldview is shaped, between 15 months and 13 years.
Yeah. But I would say, in contrary to what the previous guest was saying, men don't win from this, okay? Because what you're doing to men is you're robbing them of their role as a father and a breadwinner.
Oh, absolutely.
You're pushing them out of the household and replacing them with a welfare check. And that has devastating effects on everybody, but on particular the men who lose their role.
But for political power, it works.
It does work. It does. And but look at the tragedy for males. If you look at fentanyl overdoses, for example.
Hey Robert, we're going to have to continue this conversation at another time. We're up against the end of the program, but
sure,
we will do it because I find it fascinating. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Robert Rector at Heritage Foundation, and we will continue this conversation because I think it's fascinating and it's important. But we're out of time for today, so thanks for joining us. And until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "And you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.